Xi demonstrated his leverage over North Korea, and that will help improve his negotiating position ahead of his next summit at the G20 with Trump.
North Korea is on the upcoming G20 agenda. It's Monday, June 24th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. You can also follow us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Coming up, dispute about religious freedom in India. Nightlife in Kabul. Indo-Pacific region, a top U.S. priority. Bees take the sting out of unemployment and a solar refinery. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Chinese President Xi Jinping wrapped up a state visit to North Korea, the first by a Chinese leader in 14 years. That visit came as both Xi and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un are locked in their own standoffs with U.S. President Donald Trump. Although neither man publicly mentioned Trump during the visit, both likely hope their leverage with Trump has improved, as VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Seoul.
From all outward appearances, Xi Jinping's visit to North Korea was meant to reinforce ties with a key ally. But the visit also sent a message to Donald Trump. Kim wants to show Trump he can look to China for economic help amid stalled nuclear talks. Xi, who's locked in a trade war with the U.S., is looking for leverage ahead of crucial talks with Trump next week.
Xi demonstrated his leverage over North Korea, and that will help improve his negotiating position ahead of his next summit next week at the G20 with Trump.
Xi offered to help with North Korea's security and development. He also vowed to play an active role in nuclear talks, but it's not clear how the visit will help move those talks forward.
To be honest, this summit will not satisfy Trump. North Korea has still not shown it will resume working-level talks, and it has not yet accepted the U.S. offer of a big deal.
Though the talks are stalled, there have been some signs of progress. Trump recently said he's received beautiful letters from Kim, and a breakthrough could come next week when Trump travels to South Korea. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Seoul.
Experts say Xi Jinping may have encouraged North Korean leader Kim Jong-un to renew talks, but without a concrete roadmap for denuclearization, diplomacy is meaningless. Xi left Pyongyang early Friday, the first visit by a Chinese president in 14 years. Pyongyang's denuclearization talks with Washington have been stalled ever since the Hanoi summit in February, which was cut short without producing any deals. According to Chinese media, Kim told Xi that North Korea took many positive steps to reduce tensions, but did not get a positive response from the relevant side, referring to the United States. Evans Revere, acting Assistant Secretary for East Asia and the Pacific at the State Department during the George W. Bush administration, said Xi's meeting with Kim could have helped Pyongyang reconsider resuming its talks with Washington. Last week, U.S. President Donald Trump said he received, quote, a beautiful letter from Kim and took an optimistic stance on the possibility of future talks. Scott Snyder, director of the U.S.-Korea Policy Program at the Council on Foreign Relations, said the letter signifies that Kim still values the relationship with Trump. He added Trump is keeping the door open to denuclearization talks, and Kim is keeping the door open to the prospect of American affirmation of North Korea as a nuclear state. North Korea's internal policy document used in its training for its top military officials in November, which VOA obtained over the weekend, indicates Kim's aspiration for the country to be accepted as a nuclear state. Ken Goss, director of the Adversary Analytics Program at CNA, says China is trying to kind of restart things.
He could potentially carry a message from Kim to Trump when he meets Trump later in the next few weeks. And guidance about how to get the negotiations restarted.
Experts, however, caution Washington against holding talks with Pyongyang without narrowing their gaps over denuclearization. Revere said diplomacy toward what end? He continued, there are no signs that Pyongyang has modified the position it took at the Hanoi summit, where it rejected a common definition of denuclearization with the United States and refused to agree to a timetable and roadmap to achieve denuclearization. At the Hanoi summit, Kim demanded Trump lift sanctions while offering a partial denuclearization of dismantling its Yongbyon nuclear facility. Trump instead asked Kim to denuclearize completely in exchange for lifting the sanctions. North Korea's concept of denuclearization envisions the United States removing its nuclear umbrella and troops from the Korean Peninsula, while the U.S. understanding is for North Korea to undertake a fully verified dismantlement of all of its nuclear facilities and weapons. Robert Manning, a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council, says, "I see no evidence that Kim is interested in dismantling all of his nuclear program." Ken Goss said she could have told Kim to put more on the table other than dismantling the Yongbyon nuclear facility, while Kim most likely asked Xi to push for sanctions relief in return. Manning said she will push Trump to ease sanctions and offer a way to break the stalemate. Revere further added, Beijing will be mindful of the need not to undermine international solidarity and pressure on North Korea by providing open-ended assistance on North Korea. Bruce Klinger, the former CIA Deputy Division Chief for Korea and current Senior Research Fellow at the Heritage Foundation, says the ball is in North Korea's court to take tangible, significant steps toward denuclearization before it gets more benefits. Other than showing support for denuclearization talks, Xi's visit to Pyongyang was, according to Revere, a mixture of symbolism, largely rhetorical assurance of support by China to North Korea, and a reminder that China intends to remain a key player in diplomacy with North Korea. Our thanks to Christy Lee for contributing this story, and of course, Bill Gallo reporting from Seoul. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit our website, voanews.com. 18 dead and 24 injured in Cambodia building collapse. ASEAN leaders to discuss Rohingyas and South China Sea. Kim Jong-un praises excellent letter from Trump. Mekong region grows more important to China and U.S. relations. Internet blackout imposed on Myanmar's rest of Rakhine state. Expanded coverage of these stories and so much more can be found on Facebook at VOA Asia and, of course, voanews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. India says it is proud of its secular credentials as it rejected a U.S. report that said religious freedom in the country has come under attack in recent years. The latest U.S. State Department report on international religious freedom released Friday said that right-wing Hindu groups claiming to protect cows that Hindus consider holy had used violence, intimidation, and harassment against Muslims and low castes. It also noted that Christians have been targeted for proselytizing. In a statement, the Indian Foreign Ministry said that no foreign government had the right to criticize its record. Quote, "We see no locus standi for a foreign entity to pronounce on the state of our citizens' constitutionality-protected rights." It said that India is proud of its status as the largest democracy and a pluralistic society with a long-standing commitment to tolerance and inclusion. New Delhi's sharply worded statement comes ahead of a visit by U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo to India that begins Tuesday. His talks in New Delhi are expected to lay the ground for a meeting between U.S. President Donald Trump and Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi on the sidelines of a Group of 20 summit in Japan. The ruling BJP party also rejected the U.S. report on religious freedom, saying that the presumption that there is some grand design behind anti-minority violence is simply false. In a statement, party media head Anil Baloni said that Prime Minister Modi and other BJP leaders would have strongly deplored violence against minorities and weaker sections of the society. The U.S. report had said that senior BJP officials had last year made inflammatory speeches against religious minorities, and that despite Indian government statistics indicating that communal violence has increased sharply over the past 2 years, the Modi administration has not addressed the problem. We thank Anjana Pasricha in New Delhi for sending us this story. Happening now in Asia, Cambodian officials say at least 17 construction workers are dead after a building under construction collapsed. It's not clear how many people are missing. The workers were sleeping on the second floor of the seven-story building, and as many as 60 workers were believed to be temporarily living there. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad to start out a brand new week with you on VOA Asia. Concrete military walls and police security checkpoints are seen in every corner of Afghanistan's capital city, Kabul. The robust security presence signals a major effort to protect civilians and government officials from terrorist attacks. But the very real threat of violence like suicide attacks does not stop Kabul residents from living and enjoying their daily lives. VOA's Ahmad Samir Rasoli gives us a unique view of a typical night in Kabul.
Kabul thrives at night like in many major cities. Families and young people enjoy dining out. They eat ice cream and they take in music and entertainment in a downtown area called Shahr-e-Nau or New City. Security is also part of daily life.
Security is tight and we wanted to come out and enjoy life in the city tonight.
There's a very good vibe tonight. I've been seeing many people out in the city tonight.
I always come here for dinner because this area has good security.
There's a security problem, but not so much that people do not go out to the city.
In May alone, over 30 civilians and military personnel were killed in terror attacks in Kabul. The high security threat curtails residents' freedom. But some, like Afghan rapper Behzad Zafarmal and mixed martial artist Baz Muhammad Mubariz, say life now is still better than it was under the Taliban regime.
I'm delighted with the progress I see in Afghanistan, and I also want to support the president.
We're scared a little, but not much worried. Of course, we have our own limitations, unlike others.
Afghans who seek peace and stability worry about ongoing peace talks with the Taliban and how the outcome may affect their freedom. Freedom to be able to enjoy such nights in Kabul and across the country.
In my rap, I try to convey a message of peace and sympathy, and many people today follow this.
Striving for peace, something that has eluded Afghans for decades. Samir Rasuli, VOA News, Kabul, Afghanistan.
Coming up, defining U.S. priorities in Asia. You're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Young boys and their soccer coach walked into a cave complex in northern Thailand and were trapped by rising floodwater. Nine members of the Wild Boars Soccer Club and their coach returned Sunday to mark the anniversary of their daring rescue. You can visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features like this to see and share. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, a top U.S. Defense Department official told ambassadors and other leaders from Southeastern Asian countries that the Indo-Pacific region is our priority theater, even as China makes inroads in an area it considers its backyard. Assistant Secretary of Defense for Indo-Pacific Security Affairs, Randall Shriver, has emphasized the need for nations in the region to consider the options offered by the United States and China, which are jockeying for geopolitical and economic influence in the area before they devise their individual Indo-Pacific strategies. Shriver said, "You don't choose between countries or capitals, but you choose respect for sovereignty and independence of all nations, large and small." He added, "You can choose peaceful resolution for disputes, Can you choose free and fair reciprocal trade and investment, which includes protections for intellectual property? Can you choose to support adherence to international rules and norms, including freedom of navigation and overflight? Shriver said these were not U.S. positions or principles or values, but more universal. He made his remarks as skepticism is growing over China's Belt and Road Initiative, an infrastructure investment program that the World Bank says comes with debt risks, governance risks with corruption and procurement, stranded infrastructure, environmental risks, and also social risks. The Association of Southeast Asian Nations is a 10-member regional bloc with a combined GDP of $2.4 trillion, a population of 630 million, and a landmass covering more than 4.4 million square kilometers, according to the Council's website. Founded in 1967 by Indonesia, Malaysia, the Philippines, Singapore, and Thailand, ASEAN has since expanded to include Brunei, Darussalam, Cambodia, Laos, Myanmar, and Vietnam. Shriver said the United States looks for partners to invest sufficiently in their own defense to strengthen deterrence, to take actions that uphold the rules-based international order, which keeps the playing field level. In May, the U.S. Navy angered China by sailing one of its warships near the disputed Scarborough Shoal in the South China Sea. China claims almost all of the strategic waters where there are competing claims by Brunei, Indonesia, Malaysia, the Philippines, Taiwan, and Vietnam. VOA's Mandarin service contributed this report. This news break from VOA Asia, Xu Dongyu, China's deputy agricultural minister, was elected Sunday as the new director general of the UN Food and Agriculture Organization, the first person from a communist country to hold the influential FAO post. The 55-year-old Xu, a biologist by training, won 108 votes. You'll find all the big stories on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, North America is commemorating National Pollinator Week by recognizing the irreplaceable role that pollinators, bees, birds, butterflies, bats, beetles, and other small mammals play in the world. One of the most crucial pollinators is the honeybee, responsible for pollinating 30% of the world's crops and 90% of the world's plants. However, bee populations are on a steady decline, threatening healthy ecosystems and the local international food economy. VOA's Julie Tabo traveled to the southern region of West Virginia, where a new beekeeping initiative is providing jobs to displaced workers while helping to increase the native bee population.
James Cyphers is an unlikely beekeeper.
It's amazing how they build that up that perfect and that quick.
After leaving the military, he worked in construction, then as a coal miner for 16 years. But when the mines shut down and jobs went away, he traded in his hard hat for a beekeeping veil.
A lot of times underground, you're working in water and dark conditions, and at times it's miserable. This is not miserable. This is a really enjoyable job. I'm paying off a lot of my bills that we've had in the past that's built up over the years and able to do things for my grandbabies and my family. See, here's the queen. See how much bigger she is?
Cyphers found his job through the Appalachian Beekeeping Collective, a nonprofit that teaches displaced workers and other low-income residents looking to earn extra income how to become beekeepers.
Shake it a little bit. Just shake it a little bit. Do it real hard, but go ahead and shake it.
After completing a free 5-week program, aspiring beekeepers are given bees, hives, and all the necessary supplies they need to get started. Expert beekeeper Mark Lilly is an educator with the collective.
In my previous job, I traveled a lot of these areas. So for the past 30 years, I've watched them slowly die. So you see the people now have like hopelessness. So if we can teach a family to maybe generate $3,000 to $5,000 of additional income, if you're only making $30,000, that's a huge improvement in your lifestyle.
She's trying to get away from
them. Veteran Mike Davis has discovered the many other benefits of beekeeping.
It gives you something to look forward to on a daily basis. You're anticipating the growth of your hive. But I equate it even with my spiritual side. The bees are just not only calming, it's just like similar to dogs that other people have. I have that same affection for my bees.
And he says this is the ideal place for them.
This area of southern West Virginia is the largest forage in the world. We don't have pesticides, insecticides, because we don't have commercial farming. So we have the trees. We have a lot of water. The conditions are great for the bees.
And that translates into great-tasting honey, which is the end product of the nectar that the bees forage from some of the most diverse species of plants and flowers unique to the state. Terry Giles is with Appalachian Headwaters, which oversees the beekeeping collective.
I look here and I see what used to be a thriving railroad community has turned into a community with not a lot of options. This beekeeping collective that we are sponsoring is giving people options, but better yet, it's giving people hope for the future.
So what we're looking for here is a nice pattern.
With an eye to that future, the Appalachian Beekeeping Collective plans to expand its program to reach the next generation of beekeepers so they can help West Virginia thrive once again, this time with a more environmentally sustainable commodity.
She's beautiful. She is beautiful.
Julie Tabo, VOA News, Hinton, West Virginia.
Amid the growth of renewable energy, fossil fuels remain the fuel of choice when you're moving big things like planes and cargo ships. VOA's Kevin Enix tells us Swiss researchers are trying to make the creation of fuel a carbon-neutral process.
On the roof of the Swiss Technology College ETH Zurich, researchers are using solar energy to make the petroleum products that run the transportation industry.
In the solar reactor, we have a thermochemical process taking place, splitting water and CO2 and producing syngas. This reaction is highly endothermic, requires very high temperature, and we are providing this energy by concentrating solar radiation by a factor of 3,000.
Aldo Steinfeld from ETH Zurich and his partners say the syngas produced by this mini refinery can then be easily processed into all kinds of fuels.
This is an example of an end product, methanol. We can also process syngas to other liquid hydrocarbon fuels, such as gasoline or kerosene.
So what's the point of using a clean solar refinery to make the dirty fuels that are driving climate change? Steinfeld says their process won't make fossil fuels clean, but at least make sure they don't do any damage.
These fuels are carbon neutral. Their combustion releases exactly as much CO2 as we originally extracted from the air for their production.
The process basically creates fossil fuels that don't add any planet-warming carbon dioxide to the atmosphere. Philip Furler from the company's spin-off Synhelion says the team has set the ambitious goal of expanding this process to create fuel on an industrial scale.
Our goal is that by 2025 to have the first full-scale commercial solar fuels plant in operation with a production capacity of around 10 million liters of methanol per year.
That sounds like a lot, but keep in mind the U.S. alone burned an estimated 1.4 billion liters of gasoline in 2018. But in a rapidly warming world, every little bit helps. Kevin Enix, VOA News.
The universe is expanding, as VOA's Rick Pantaleo takes a moment to expound.
This is Science in a Minute.
A few years ago, a trio of physicists won Nobel Prizes for their work that shows the universe is expanding at a rapid rate. New research led by Adam Riess, one of the three Nobel laureates at Johns Hopkins University, has confirmed that the universe is not only rapidly expanding, but is doing so at a rate 9% faster than expected. Riess's researchers say that they use new measurements taken by NASA's Hubble Space Telescope and base the jump in speed of the expansion on a trajectory that was seen shortly after the Big Bang nearly 14 billion years ago. The way scientists usually take their star measurements takes a lot of time. But using a new measurement method called DASH, the researchers were able to use the Hubble as you would with a point-and-shoot camera that many of us use today. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Find us on iTunes and SoundCloud, our VOA Asia Facebook page, and our website, voanews.com. You'll also find us on the radio, Helps Radio at Help University in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. We thank everyone there who's tuned in today. And, of course, we need to thank our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Zainab Abdel-Rahman, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and Anna Cook. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day.